From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Children of the night, welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is my ever wonderful, ever vampiric, ever cape wearing, ever the veil thinning, keeping track of guy.
Sure, we'll take it.
Count Panic himself. Oh, hey there, Count Panic.
Oh, hey there, Bob. How's it going today?
Oh, you know
what? As I fight to go adjust my levels and then my cape gets stuck in my rolling chair.
You know, sometimes it gets...
That happens, I guess. Now it's all messed up. But yes, Bob, hope you're doing well. I know yesterday you found yourself in a little situation.
Yeah, absolutely. We
pushed the live show back a little bit here.
We'll get to that, but let's get your weekend update, Count Panic.
Well, the weekend looks good, as you can see, besides my cape here. But the weekend was good, Bob. What did we do this weekend? Oh, I went to Michigan for a little bit. You know,
other great state
even
up north.
Vampires there sometimes need a break, so to spend some time out there in Michigan during the day and other parts of Indiana, Rolling Prairie. Before that, it was kind of an eventful weekend. Usually, you ask me about my weekend, and it was usually pretty calm. But this one, we kind of went around Indiana. And speaking of going around Indiana, Monticello, Indiana, of course, for the folks maybe listening at home. If you don't know what's in Monticello, Indiana, well, Indiana Beach is in Monticello, Indiana. So we were down there, did a little filming down there, some live radio down there as well. And Indiana Beach, if people aren't hip with it right now, it was on the brink of being gone forever. And then luckily somebody did buy it a few months back. So they are back and better than ever. So it was fun to see what's going on down there. And you know, I know 2020 is a year where a lot of people are just staying inside and trying to stay safe out there, but have hopes for next year that'd be a better year for everybody, and hopefully more people can go out in public and mingle, and the park will be at full capacity once again as it was in its heyday, Bob. But all in all, a very nice weekend.
That's great. I haven't been down to Indiana Beach since I was a boy.
Since a young Bob.
I used to spend summers down there as a kid. My grandfather lived right on Lake Schaefer.
Really? How about that? Well, that's a fun fact. See, we got to do Bob trivia sometimes because you bring up these interesting facts sometimes and I don't realize it. So you spent some time down there as a kid, but as a grown man, I think you should probably, maybe take a trip back down there. I think you'll be happy to see what it's like these days. Because for a few years there, like I said, it was pretty grim, but now it's back to the old days, you know, Bob. Upwards and onwards for Indiana Beach.
Absolutely. Are you ready for my weekend?
I'm ready for your weekend, Bob.
I spent most of my weekend dealing with sunburn.
Sunburn?
Sunburn. I know that's not something y'all ever have to deal with being a vampire.
No, vampires don't get sunburn. But you had to deal with sunburn.
I had to deal with
sunburn.
Well,
you look pretty. I didn't want to say anything, but you got a golden aura to you right now. I mean, you're looking pretty tan. Where'd you go?
I spent some time privately out in the Wisconsin wilderness with the Queen of the Night, celebrating her birthday.
Wisconsin wilderness. And yes. There's a lot of wilderness in Wisconsin.
That's exactly it. We had a good time. This week on Bob After Dark, we're doing something a little different. But before we get to that, if this is your first time ever watching us on the live version of Bob After Dark, welcome. We are the paranormal radio show / podcast where we talk about legends, lore, and supernatural. And if this is your first time ever listening to us in podcast land and you're enjoying what you're hearing, make sure you jump over to the Apple Podcast website and leave us a 5-star review so Count Panic can toast you live on air.
Yes, a toast similar to this right here. So
we don't have any 5-star.
We
don't have any new 5
live right now.
Oh, your voice is in the background.
I guess we were.
Okay, so we're doing something a little different this week on Bob After Dark. Yes, we're still doing something paranormal today. They're ruining the surprise right now.
I'll meet them for 1 second.
Okay,
go ahead, Bob.
This week on Bob After Dark, we're doing something a little different, and that is we're trying to raise some awareness on a topic before we dive into our normal episode. So something here on Bob After Dark I like to stress is that every so often something really bad happens. And what we talk about on the show are things that you might be afraid of or things that might go bump in the night. But in reality, sometimes those horrors are actually at your front door and they are causing problems in the real life 3D world. It's not necessarily always paranormal. Sometimes it's mental anguish and sometimes it's literal physical anguish. And right now in one of the fine states that we have right here in America, there is a problem. Joining me tonight to talk a little bit about the problem that's going on is Louisiana Ghostbusters' very own Ben and one of the charity organizations that's trying to raise money for the hurricane relief down in Louisiana. We have Brian Campbell. Hello, gentlemen.
Okay, Bob, I've got my mask. We're socially distancing over the air, right?
All right. Hello, gentlemen. Who are you and... who are you? What do you do? What do you represent? Let's start with the gentleman who's showing off his mask and his wonderful shirt.
Well, I wanted to coordinate to make sure that we look good for your viewers.
Absolutely.
Because it's not just listeners, right, Bob?
No, we Bob After Dark, before it hits podcast land, we're a radio show and technically a TV show. If you're watching us on the WJOB apps on your smartphones, you can, or smart TVs, you can see us on there as well. So we're a multimedia empire here at Bob After Dark. So not only are people listening to you, Ben, but they also can see you.
Okie dokie. Well, I'm glad I put on my big boy pants today. Actually, I don't need pants the way we're doing.
No, you don't.
Just
no.
Don't stand up.
Just don't stand up, because then the FCC will come and knock.
Hello. Yeah. And Bob, in a minute, I want to talk about, after we get our plug here in, Rick Moranis popping up, you know, for fans of the spooky out of nowhere coming out of retirement. Did you hear about that?
I certainly did. That's we'll get to that. That's definitely a news story in of itself. Rick Moranis sightings are kind of like,
like the kind unicorn.
Of, yeah, exactly. Or like the Rougarou, yes. From the episode when the Louisiana Ghostbusters helped out with the Rougarou situation.
Well, usually when you get shrunk, you don't get seen, you know, from for a while. So
they're going to get your toes, you know.
Yeah. So, all right. I digress. You asked me a question.
Yes. Who are you and why are you on my show?
All right. I've invaded Bob After Dark once again as the co-founder of the Louisiana Ghostbusters. Here in our 10th year, we just celebrated our 10th anniversary.
Congratulations.
As a group that basically takes our hobby for cosplay and our love of the Ghostbusters franchise and does good for our community. And there are hundreds of groups like us around the world that volunteer, attend special events. We like to call, I like to use the word event enhancement, which I stole from my friends at the Alabama Ghostbusters, and just try to make something good better or just try to launch a cause where the need is seen. And so we've done this for 10 years in our area, working with children's hospitals and autism events and Down syndrome and American Cancer Society. But once in a while, we pick a special cause that's you know, a little more physical, and we kind of get in there and try to make a difference where it's needed. And so our group has sort of keyed in and partnered with my cousin and good friend and lifelong fellow Big Mouth, Brian, with Impact Acadiana. So for those of you in Chicago who aren't familiar with the term, Acadiana comes from the French word Acadie. It's basically the Cajun country part of Louisiana. It's the heart of South Central, Southwest, and Southeast Louisiana. We call it Acadiana, and it's basically a big chunk of our state with a very unique culture it's unlike anything else in the world. The food, the atmosphere, the people, the resilience.
Because it's basically where the water boy is from, right? You know, it's water boy country.
Yeah, water boy is basically a true story of the
it's
whole
water boy country, state. Yeah.
But when Brian talks, you're going to hear my accent start coming out. I switch in and out of it. My 5 years in New York, I learned how to turn it off when I need to. Or I can even turn on my Chicago if you need to hear some of that.
That's more like it.
That's
right
more
there,
like yeah, it. Yeah. Need some deep dish pizza.
Yeah. You owe me some Polish sausage and a deep dish there, fella. I'm just kind of waiting on that. But anyway, that's what we do. And we're 10 years in now. And right after we celebrated our 10-year anniversary, Hurricane Laura hit the southwest part of our state in a major way, and in, I think in a much more impactful way than what is being covered. And so we're trying to make a difference for the locals. Brian sort of took his laser scalpel and he found a good, special, needed area that we can have the most impactful, direct way of helping folks in that area. And in a minute, if you give me a second, I'll tell you about how bad it is, because I've been there firsthand. I've been to the heart of it.
Absolutely. Before you get to the story, I do want to introduce Brian as well. So make sure.
Yes, let's get him in there.
Okay, so joining Ben with me and Count Panic is the gentleman who is spearheading all of this great great awareness, and something that really needs to be talked about right now is Brian Campbell with the Impact Academia. Did I pronounce that right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's all good. It's all inference. We know what you mean. And I'm glad Ben's here. He could serve as a translator. You know, maybe some if anybody needs to translate any of my Cajun. But Bob and Tony, I just want to personally say, dude, I appreciate y'all having us to talk about the cause, but I'm down to talk about the spooky, man. I want to talk about some Louisiana spooks.
Story tonight is actually based on probably the most haunted location. Louisiana,
dude, and Rice, and we got some spook stuff here, man. I want to tell y'all about Kushma and Three Tontons and our Traiteurs and all kinds of good stuff.
We can't say it like that.
You're last time.
Oh, y'all did? Oh man,
you need to do that because I have personal.
You stole my thunder.
Traiteurs. So we didn't. We never got around to it.
Oh,
bro.
Good. So by trade, I'm gonna give you the 25-cent version. But by trade, I'm a professor of biomechanics at the University of Louisiana at Lafayette. I'm dyslexic, so my mind sees motion well. I can't spell biomechanics, but I could teach my students how the body works, how the body moves. I do a lot of charity work. In fact, where we kind of have a big thing together is all the comic cons that I attend. I collect autographs and then we roll them over and donate them to charities and do auctions. So I'm kind of a professional stalker. I was at one of Stan Lee's last comic cons and I stood in line for hours for Chuck Norris. And, I will get the autograph. I mean, I'll jump out of a bush, you know, and just freak them out, you know, would you sign this? And then boom, I'm gone, dude, like the Roadrunner.
Like the ta-ta.
So charity has always been, you know, as a teacher, I can never afford to give a lot of money. But we can all find our niche in this world to help each other. So I've found ways to help, you know, try to raise money. And that's why we're here. Impact Acadiana is just a community nonprofit. We don't serve one niche. We serve several niches. Anyone who needs help, we're there to help them. I never tell anybody no. There's always a way we can help. And so in this regard, look, man, I'm not a builder. You know, my sons will tell you any project that they have to do for school, they're like, Dad, can you call Uncle Jason? And I'm like, you got it, son. So I'm not a person that can really lend a skill of that regard, but I can do other things. I could try to help in other ways. And this is one of those ways that I feel I can contribute to what is needed right now in Southwest Louisiana. And I do want to add, Louisiana, typically, you know, if you ask anybody, name one thing about Louisiana, of course, they're going to go, you know, New Orleans. I guess it's kind of like New York. My major professor was from New York, and upstate New York is obviously not New York City, but everyone maybe infers that the whole state is just one giant city, right? And that's kind of with Louisiana, you know, you just, New Orleans gets all the attention because it's a big city, but we have this little, you know, heel of Louisiana, this Lake Charles area, which is about, you know, 2.5 hours from Houston. And it's not a big town. It's not a well-known town, but it's pretty beat up right now. And it needs some love and it needs some attention. And that's where you guys are really helping us out tonight.
Absolutely. Ben, now, the tagline on the show, you know, we talk a lot of things about ghost bump in the night, and we do talk a lot about things that are scary and ghost stories, you know, cryptozoology, things like that. But a big thing I like to stress on the show from time to time, and as I said on my little tagline, is sometimes the horrors are right at your front door and not so much metaphysical as they are just straight physical. And you told me your story over the phone, and I, compelled isn't the word, it was just I needed to do something to try to help you guys out in the best way I can. And I was hoping you can share your experiences so the folks at home and the folks all over the country that are listening to this get an idea of what's going on in Louisiana and what's not being covered.
You know, Yeah, supernatural horror is the crux of what a lot of fans of the occult and, you know, fans of Ghostbusters and real ghost hunters like to talk about. But there are natural horrors. And I think Brian and I have been beholden to that very recently, where if that meteorologist busted his storm path by 5 degrees, your family's life is in danger. Your roof could get blown off your house if the wrong window cracks and lets the air in, because that's how roofs get blown off of houses.
Trees falling on your stuff, man.
Yeah. If you decided not to board up your windows because you know it's really hard backbreaking work and it's 98 degrees and 100% humidity over here and it's miserably hot and you think you might dodge the bullet and if that's the wrong call, you could your family could lose their life. As the winds howl and the little tornadoes like to kick up and spawn, and we're not talking big tornadoes like Twister. A hurricane tornado is the little finger of God that kind of just decides to put itself down on the earth and flatten random areas. And so I've seen that going into the disaster area. You'll go by a mobile home park and not one of the roofs is very badly damaged, a couple shingles missing, and just a few hundred feet over, everything is imploded and trashed, and just there could have been people in there.
Right.
You know, thank God most people evacuated when they saw this monster coming, because here's what they said was going to happen and what actually happened was not consistent. And that's the problem with a hurricane. At the last minute, it could make a turn. The core could be tightly wound or it could be wider, and the wrong kind of a wide core in a storm like that over the Gulf for too long can drive in a tidal surge, which is not like a tidal wave. It's basically like all the bayous and rivers backing up like a toilet and literally overflowing their banks and flooding everybody for days and days as the water has nowhere to go. So the wind kicks back to the north.
It's almost like a real game of Dungeons and Dragons with 100-sided dice, and you roll the dice and you don't know where it's going to go.
Yep.
And not only that, but every time a hurricane gets into the Gulf, everybody has to be prepared. So, you know, let's say one misses you a few times. Well, then, oh, well, y'all are overreacting. You know, we've been through this before. We don't have nothing to fear. It's going to go somewhere else. And so there's just a lot of factors involved.
Well, let's talk about that, Brian. Numbness, okay?
Yeah.
COVID is not just in the Midwest, guys. We have COVID worldwide. Nobody's dodging that bullet. Everybody's in a weird kind of Twilight Zone existence right now because of COVID. And then we've got all the civil unrest that's going on. And I don't want to get into politics, but when you've got all that that's occupying people's minds and a big election coming up, here comes this monster storm. And this might have been the top headline for weeks prior to and weeks after. Not only is it not the top headline, but I think our people were sort of numb to it. We're supposed to be starting school. We're not. We're putting it off. We're waiting for numbers to come down. And so I think people just didn't prepare the way they normally would, having seen Katrina and seen Rita and going through the numbness that COVID and the politics and civil unrest have caused. And so it's almost like it snuck up, or like people just didn't react. They, like the reflex action you normally would get with a hurricane. I don't know, Brian, if this was your experience, you know, 10 years ago, I would have been boarding up my windows this time.
No, it's true. People had their hands up in the air. They were just like, Jesus, take the wheel. You know, they just had their hands up in the air.
Or we were just like, look, we've been through this before. We know what it did last time. We know what maybe we'll get away with this time, as long as it doesn't come straight for us. And it can. At the last minute, it can turn and come right for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, boom, there we are. And it's a Thursday night. And all of a sudden, you're hoping you prepared. You're hoping you got your generator on backup because you know you're not going to have power for a while.
And guys, that's some of the things with when you have a hurricane, it destroys all the infrastructure. So, no power, the sewage. I mean, you have stuff backed up and you have.
Never forget that smell after just sitting in water mixed with sewage for days.
And it's stuff that we just take for granted, right? You know, we kind of live in third world problems. But literally we have an area that's kind of living in a third world right now. Yeah. And they're not prepared for it. And you think about the children and you think about, you know, the older people and the people who, you know, guys, last time I checked, it's hot and humid down here in South Louisiana. Right. And so, again, you have several thousand people that are literally living with no power, no air. Food is scarce. It's not like you could just run to go grab a burger because there's no place open, you know, because nobody has power. And so it really is just quite a, you don't know what you have until it's gone. You know what I mean, Bob and Tony?
Oh, absolutely.
It's just one of those,
what what struck me the most, Ben was telling me a little bit on the phone when we were setting up the interview, and he told me, he's like, if you go in to try to help them, you better hope, you better have fuel. Because if you run out or you get low and you need to get fuel,
you're done.
Ben was telling me, you said people are driving hours to get fuel.
Yep. If you don't go in with the tanks and you got to go to the nearest station, or if you're looking for water, or if you need fuel for your generator, because that's how you keep in your refrigerator or your family cool with that one air conditioner, or keeping lights on at night so you don't have to worry about, you know, crime still happens after a storm. People might come in and try to take something that's yours. The generator, the noise of a generator can attract theft, and you may wind up without that fuel, that crucial little lifeline that connects you to the fine line between, Paradise Lost and a major disaster area and civilization.
Right.
That's right out of reach sometimes.
And, guys, for hurricanes, you have two major, you know, really big dangers. One is obviously the real high winds, right? That could be bad. That can knock over a tree on your house. That can, but there's something called the surge, where if you imagine all of this energy from thousands of miles building up, all of this aquatic momentum, just building up all of this water momentum. And as that surge from all of that water momentum comes up, that water pushes inland. And my hometown, I come from a little small town of Delcom. It's called Delcom, Louisiana. And our houses have to be built up 15 feet up in the air now, because as these storms push in more water, with some erosional factors too, but that's also a killer. You know, you get 50 foot, my mom and dad, I'm not over exaggerating, right? You know, oh, how big was that fish? You know, Cajuns, we can exaggerate a story. I'm not exaggerating this story. My mom and dad have a camp on the coast, and it's 17 feet. It is 17 feet up in the air.
Okay, I'm I heard it was 18 feet.
Well, how big was that fish? I like to, you know, I downplay it. But 17 feet up in the air, and there was water inside that camp. The surge, the aquatic momentum, the Gulf of Mexico literally came
back
upon
up,
shore that
onto
high.
The shore. Yeah.
It can literally push a house.
That could have happened with this storm, because it happened with Hurricanes Ike and Rita, and it could have put his town of Delcom and my town of Erath not only as bad underwater as it was 10 years ago or 15 years ago, but even worse. Is
even
what we
worse.
Were expecting with this storm.
Yep.
What it did, though, instead, is it was tightly wound, and it kind of focused on this one disaster area, and it leveled everything there.
Yep.
And then it had more of a wind event where the wind was more tightly packed, and it's almost like between two towns that are called Jennings and Iowa, spelled just like the state of Iowa, things all of a sudden go from somewhat damaged and moderately damaged to every power pole is snapped and laying across the road, and you got power lines in the road. And I'm not talking just like wooden power poles you see in rural areas. I'm talking including the steel poles and the concrete filled poles have snapped, or they've been blown so hard they pulled themselves out of the dirt and laid themselves across the road. And that's just talking about the road damage. Then you look out and you see debris everywhere.
That's
just sheet aluminum and siding. And I've seen houses with bricks just kind of ripped off of them. You know, the big bad wolf does not care if you build your house out of bricks sometimes.
No.
He'll take that down too.
And now, guys, y'all know one of the X-Men mutant powers that we Cajuns have is we're able to feed a lot of people. And that's just kind of what we like to feed people. We like to feed. And I don't know if our people kind of took the recipe from the Bible, you know, when Jesus fed like 3,000 people on a loaf of bread and some fish. But that's really one of our needs right now. One of our needs. So in other words, when we're here to tell you about what's happening here and telling you, kind of describing some of the situation, but then it becomes to, so what? Okay, that's really bad, but so what? And so one of the things we're going to be talking about with this drive is that's one of our missions, is to feed all the people who don't have access to a refrigerator, to milk, to food. And again, it's not like they can just go and grab quick service right now. The stores aren't open. And so literally we have these people from all over the state. And not only the state, we have people coming in from Texas. It really is a regional thing. And every day they go over there and just cook. They got these big, I mean, imagine Halloween's coming. Imagine this big witch pot, right? Where, you know, just imagine a witch kind of stirring.
It's
a cauldron. It really is. And Cajuns have those like we have them like Pez. and we're and we're bringing them over there, and they cook in jambalaya and rice and corn. And imagine for some of these people who haven't had electricity, they haven't had a normal life, and all of a sudden they get a hot, fresh cooked meal, a sense of normalcy, you know, fill their tummies, and some good fellowship, and it's going to be okay, and some hugs and some love.
Yeah,
and
but those bouts of heat stroke where you're on your roof trying to tarp your roof so you don't get mold in your house while you're waiting for the roofer because you're number 185 on his roofing list. You know, that's those little respites of humanity and civilization.
Absolutely.
That we can bring Gentlemen, to them if you know exactly where to go, and that's what we're doing. We know exactly where to send it.
Yeah.
If we can get the help, if people willing to donate. But we made it. We sweetened the pot.
Let's talk real quick about, because we do have fans chiming into the chat, and I'm sure we have fans listening all over. Literally, we're nationally syndicated. What can people do to help right now that aren't in Louisiana and can't cook jambalaya? You don't want me cooking. you don't want me cooking. So what can we do here? What can we do to help you guys? What's going on right now? I know you're doing a really cool charity drive right now. Why don't you guys talk a little bit about that?
For some, maybe I buried the headline, but Brian, tell them what we're doing to sweeten the pot.
So what Impact Acadiana, my charity, is doing is we are outright donating an all expense paid trip to Disney World next year in for Christmas time. Now, not necessarily during Christmas week, but during the Christmas season, where all the lights, it's just gorgeous over there. You're going to stay at a deluxe resort. We're going to get you the meal plan. We're going to get you park tickets. We're going to take care of you. And by the way, there's some actually cool ghost stories about Disney World. Maybe
I did a Disney episode recently. Absolutely.
That's really cool. So this is very important. My charity isn't taking out expenses for this trip. In other words, we're not raising a chunk of money, taking out expenses and giving the rest. We're outright donating this so that every penny that we can raise in this drive can literally go to feed our people and help restore their power and help rebuild their homes.
Imagine electricity, guys, for 2 or 3 months. That's what they're going through. That's where they need that lifeline. We got to stretch that time out and make it easy for them that way.
Absolutely. So I'm kind of a Disney. My dyslexia works well in biomechanics and Disney World for whatever reason. It's a shell game. Disney is a shell game. And I have a lot of students that go there for their college internship program. And I every year I take tour groups and auction winners. And so I know Disney really well. And so what I'm willing to do is on my own expense, I'll go out there with the winners and I'll guide them. Like, I will personally guide them through parks. I will guide them through. They're never going to have to wait in line. They're going to know all the best routes in and out. Like imagine like Mario Brothers, you know, little warp tunnels, right? You go into one tunnel, you pop out the other end. I'm going to do all that stuff for them. Basically, I want them to have an experience of a lifetime. Because it's important. That's how important this cause is for us. And it's just a little hook that we could say thank you. You know, saying thank you is one thing, but showing our thanks by saying, listen, I hope you win this, because that's the least we can do for you giving us, you know, a $25, $50, $100 donation.
Real quick, gentlemen, we some of the fans are asking for the link and how they can enter for the contest. Ben, can you message me over that, or Brian throughout the show at some point? Or actually message Count
really
Panic.
Quick, if folks are on social, go to Louisiana Ghostbusters.
We'll post it on our page, too.
Yeah, we'll get it up on WJOB, and we'll have it up on Bob After Dark by the end of the evening, folks, so stick around.
I mean, guys, we're doing it with PayPal and Venmo. You donate $25 or more, you got an entry into the contest. And every $25 you donate, you're going to have more entries. So you increase your chances to get this trip that is worth about $5,000.
Yeah.
And it doesn't cover travel to get there. But
you
once you're
there,
you're covered. You got food, you got accommodations, you got your Disney tickets once you get there.
And Brian Boucher is going to take care of you when you're there, right?
Cajun guide.
Gentlemen, before we let you go and we move on, you're on Bob After Dark. We got to talk a little bit about what we could do to help Louisiana. You're on the paranormal show of paranormal shows. I need to know, you guys are in probably the most haunted state in the Union, in my opinion. What?
Well, I'm glad we're number one in something.
I'm 98%
and everything else.
You know, 98% sure you guys are probably the most haunted state in America. I don't think there's one that tops it. Honestly, there is so much. You know, I've never even been, and I tell you that, you know, that place calls me, and I hear it, and you know, I hear the stories, and people always ask me, and they bring up locations. What is your favorite ghost story in Louisiana? Like, lay it out for me. What's your favorite location, or do you guys have any experiences you want to share?
Ben, you want to start? Or you want me to start?
They got that house on LeBlanc Street in Delcom. Everybody says it's haunted.
Dude, the shadows on the Tesh, bro.
Yeah.
The shadows is probably the most.
Rip Van Winkle Gardens. I've heard so many stories right there where you are. That place was an island during Hurricane Rita. Everything was surrounded by water. And
the grave of the grave. The grave of Charlotte Richard gets a lot of play for the supernatural. Yeah. Guys, one of the things I like to explain things, and I think one of the reasons we have such a spookiness is our water table. I know that sounds kind of silly, but our tombs and our graves can't be
right
on the ground.
Right.
Yeah. So because the water table is so high, so that's why you have these big above ground kind of tombs, and to me that leads to, you know, you imagine you know, Gettysburg and all of just, you know, the solemn just crosses that are there. In Louisiana, we can't have burials like that. So you just get these elegant, you know, graveyards and the tours that come of it and Marie Laveau's tomb. And
tell them what happened to the graves at the Hurricane Rita in the Delcom Cemetery.
Oh, man, it was
railroad tracks.
We had graves floating all over town.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they got stuck on the railroad track, which is a natural barrier, like a levee that divides the two halves of town, and the cemetery is right on it.
You had caskets
floated out of the ground and was stuck on the railroad tracks.
Yeah, it's true.
From these above ground cemeteries, because that's all we have. Yeah. Everything's above ground. We have mausoleums that are above ground where you can stack them like a game of battleship. You know, that's how we do the mass mausoleums.
But you have to do below ground. If you do it under the ground, though, you have to do a vault. So that way, you know, again, to try to protect from the water table.
Yikes.
But to me, that adds to the spookiness. It adds to the element of our cemeteries being, I mean, put it to you this way, man, the mystery machine wouldn't even drive up to some of the cemeteries we got, we got over here. They would just keep on driving. But that adds to the element of the mystique and the mystery. And, it's dope, man.
Do you either one of you have an experience you want to share? Either one of you have an encounter or something that happened to you while in the great state of Louisiana?
I do not, but I have long wanted to go on an investigation or a hunt as a Louisiana Ghostbuster. And look, we don't bust ghosts. Louisiana Ghostbusters is more like a fan group. We love the genre of the movies, but there's a group in Louisiana I want to plug called Louisiana Spirits, and it's regional, and it is – they certify and are very careful with their investigations. And the Southwest region in our area, I've often talked to some of the folks who run that group about going with them on some of their investigations in some of these most haunted places in the state, so that maybe I might get to see my own kind of personal experience. Because I'm Catholic, and I believe in the soul, and I believe in eternity, and I believe in a lot of the spiritual stuff that we were taught growing up with. And I believe sometimes that might manifest itself, in ways that we can see and prove and document. But I have not personally had an experience.
Brian?
I had something that I don't know if y'all have ever heard of, Couchemot or Three Tontons, or maybe it's like, it's different names for different things, but basically it's that the quote unquote demon that gets on you, that paralyzes you when you're sleeping and you can't wake up, and you're in this dream awake state, maybe like some kind of in some kind of purgatory of consciousness. And you're literally just saying, move your hand, move your hand, move your hand. And you just start sweating and you can't move. And I've had that happen a couple of times, and that was was terrifying. And
it's interesting,
and listen,
you guys,
that could be, you know, hey, maybe it's naturally explained, da 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 da. That's way above my pay grade. but I remember my friends talking about that in school, and that happened to me one time, and I was never more happy. Never more happy. That's a Cajun sentence for you. Man, I was never more happy when I finally was able to escape that state that I was in. And I'm just breathing heavy, and I'm just thankful I'm alive. That was intense. That was intense.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for coming on the show. Thank you for sharing some experiences. And this whole episode tonight, by the way, I'm talking about the Madame Lalalay house in New Orleans tonight. That's going to be the big lore topic of this evening. But we're dedicating the entire episode to Louisiana. And you know, we're doing the best we possibly can to help you guys out, and we want to raise as much awareness as we can. We're just a small blip on the radar. Don't tell Count Panic that he'll grow a head, an ego. But
what the heck is he talking about, guys? I mean, I can't believe the guy. He knocks his own podcast.
Yeah, hey, no, but we just
capital B for blip to me, brother.
Thank you. But we really appreciate it, and we really appreciate you guys taking some time out to talk to us. And I hope you guys can stick around and enjoy the rest of the show.
Absolutely. Thank you, Tony and Bob.
Once again, because I know people have short attention spans.
Yes.
Giving away a Disney trip.
Giving away Disney trip.
We'll get the link after the show,
yeah,
too.
We'll get the link up after the show. You guys check that out, the Bob After Dark Facebook page. And then that way there you guys can go follow along and be able to donate where, you know, it's going to go directly to them. Someone in James in the chat was asking what's some good charities to donate to and what are some bad ones that might be milking the idea. Donating directly to these guys, you know, Ben and Brian, they're literally right there. They're frontline action. You know, they Ben sent me pictures of what's going on. You know, you donate directly to Ben's charity, the Louisiana Ghostbusters, is a 501c. So you're going directly to a good home, and they're giving the money directly to the people, like straight up. There's no middleman. It's
no
Ben.
One's on salary over
no,
here.
No, no one's on salary.
Actually,
so
Bob, just to clarify, Impact Acadiana is a registered 501c. Louisiana
well.
Ghostbusters isn't quite there yet.
Oh, my apologies. I'm sorry, guys. So backwards there, but
I just didn't want to put out the word that we were a 501c.
That's how transparent we are.
My sincerest apologies. I'm sorry, Ben.
That's why we're partnered with him, because we wanted the trust that a 501c garners, and that's what Impact Acadiana does. And then Louisiana Ghostbusters is 10 years of not leading people wrong or going astray. And so that's two big things you can trust. With eyewitnesses that are going to get it right where it needs to go. And
transparency,
hey,
man.
So my sincerest apologies, Ben.
No worries. I just.
But no. But either way, they are partnering. Either way, Louisiana Ghostbusters does a lot of good for their community. They're. You know, you think Ghostbusters, they're in the top three or four groups in the country that you think about when you think about big groups that do big things for them. And Brian's group is a legitimate 501c that's getting the money directly out to them. There's nobody on salary.
Nope.
There's no middleman. That money's going directly to help these people out. So thank you guys for coming on the show. And we'll get all those stuff up. And as soon as things calm down with COVID, I'm going to come down for a visit. I need to see
let's
this. I need to
I
see
want
this.
To see Bob covered in powdered sugar after his first.
Oh, man. He's going to look like he just went on a Charlie Sheen bender. His blood sugar is going to be 1,000. It's going to be awesome.
He'll never come back.
And Bob, there's no meat in it.
There's no meat. That's good.
It's just goodness. Just goodness.
Thank you so much, gentlemen. You guys have a very good evening.
Thank you, guys.
Absolutely. All right, folks. So once again, I know that's a little different than what we normally do on the show, you know, but we, at the end of the day, Count Panic and I are humanitarians. Not so much you, Count. You're unhuman.
Vampire-tarian. Yeah,
but
like that.
Either way, folks, sometimes what we said at the beginning of the show, sometimes the horrors are right at your front door, and if there's something I can do to help, I'd like to help. And that's Ben's stories touched me, and I really wanted to stretch it out there. So let's dive right into the show. We're going to kind of rustle around the news stories, and I do have a viewer write-in bit here. Count Panic.
Yeah.
Do you like news stories?
I do like news stories, Bob.
Okay, so what we do here on Bob After Dark is we cover bits of articles that our fans write in about. This could be anywhere from paranormal hitting mainstream media, weird bits of news, or even weird advances in science that are borderline science fiction. You, the fans, send these in, and I read them out loud, and we get the hashtag panics take because I don't prep them on anything.
I have no clue what's going on here.
Except you did tell me something happened.
I did have a story. I actually had a story.
Count
yeah.
Panic.
How about that?
For the first time in Bob After Dark history, Count Panic is going to lay a new story on me.
How about this?
And share it with me. And you're going to get the hashtag Bob's Take.
All right. You want me to do it now?
Yeah, I want to hear your story first.
Now, this is kind of eerie here, Bob.
All right, let's hear it.
And a lot of folks may have heard about this, but an FBI investigation is going on right now because a pilot reported of a guy in a jetpack flying 3,000 feet in the air near planes at LAX. The FBI is currently investigating an incident that took place near Los Angeles International Airport after an American Airlines pilot reported seeing a mystery person in a jetpack flying in the path of incoming jets on Sunday evening. The FBI is aware of the reports by pilots on Sunday and is working to determine what occurred here. The American Airlines pilot reported via radio to the control tower seeing a guy in a jetpack as it's approaching LAX at about 3,000 feet and 10 miles out for the landing. There's a little video of the phone call in there as well. A second pilot also reported the incident, so you notice it wasn't a case of just a one pilot seeing things. The pilots are reporting it using a visual flight rules, meaning there was plenty of visibility and it wasn't dark at the time. Based on research, jetpacks can fly that high, but it's pretty uncommon. There's an assumption that people with a technical and financial ability to fly at this extreme height and near an airport would also understand the regulations around flying LAX's path. So people know about the danger of this, of course. You're in the path of incoming jets. One theory suggests that the incident could be an internet or social media stunt. So this is an ongoing investigation, but a couple pilots here, not one pilot, but two pilots reporting to see a man with a jetpack. What do you think, Bob? What's Bob's take? Hashtag Bob's take.
Vixis Nay took it right from me in the chat. I was going to say the real life rocketeer.
Ah.
What does 2020 need? A man with a jetpack to come and save the day.
I guess so.
Geez, man. Can you imagine being that pilot? Like, just being like, there's a guy up here.
Well,
there's a singular, yeah. There's a singular guy up here.
I'm glad the second pilot saw, because if one person sees it, they're crazy. But if two people see it.
See, then there's something to it.
Yeah, there's something to it then. So luckily, there's backup for this gentleman here, the pilot that saw the guy in the jetpack. But, you know, they say it's a guy with a jetpack, but then I thought, well, maybe it's Mothman. But it seems like it's a guy with a jetpack. But who is the mystery man with the jetpack? Will he ever be discovered?
I wonder. And I wonder if this is just a hoax story, but it doesn't sound like it.
No, I don't know.
I'm really interested to see what it is. And you know what? Man in jetpack or woman in jetpack, it doesn't have to be, you know, whoever is flying that jetpack, you are the hero that 2020 needs.
I guess so. But,
the Rocketeer, man.
Yeah, but I don't know what they're doing as a James chime in. I don't know what they're doing in a flying the plane traffic is there as well. Might not be the safest move, but
they're testing it out.
They're testing it out.
You know,
well, you know, all these.
Even Tony Stark had a thing. He had to test it out. You know, you gotta figure out what you're doing.
Could
but
be one of those.
They're the hero.
Whoever SpaceX things. Going
whomever
on.
Is up there that's flying that jetpack, you're the hero. 2020 deserves.
All right, there we go.
All right, Count Panic. My first news story. Actually, all of our news stories this week were donated by our friend Whitney.
Whitney, loyal listener. Whitney
Roden has sent in the most news articles I think we've ever had. Whitney just like chimes in, and I don't think Whitney and I have ever had like an actual conversation. Whitney will just send in articles, boom, 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 boom. And that's it. And I'll be like, wow, that's a great story. Where do you get these from? And she just, that's what she does. She listens to the show and she finds articles.
There
so
you go.
Whitney, thank you. We appreciate your we appreciate the help here.
Let's pay Whitney with a toast.
Right, a Count Panic toast on air.
That's yeah. We can't pay you, but we could pay you in toast.
And water in a water 16-ounce cup
there
at the WJOB studios. So first story is a massive lava tube found in Mars and the moon actually could be home to life. So imagine the story is that there's lava tubes under the surface of both the moon and Mars that are large enough to be homes of planetary bases as humanity further explores the cosmos, and a newly published study suggests. The research notes the tubes are likely between 100 and 1,000 times the size of those on Earth and can shield humans from cosmic radiation. The tubes are likely up to 100 feet wide and upwards of 25 miles long. These lava tubes can provide stable shields from cosmic and solar radiation and different, you know, meteor impacts and whatever else kind of dangers that happen with, you know, basically space colonization. And they're saying that if they can get people there and they're going to set up these bases in the tubes, in these old lava tubes, then that's what we can do to actually have people like hanging out in space and doing some colonization. Hashtag panic steak.
Well, that's equally as eerie too. I know. So they're going to try to colonize this possibly.
That's what they're thinking. That's what they're thinking.
I got to research more about this because this is a curious one for me. But I mean, if so, more power to them. I mean, colonized, I guess, but I gotta read more up on this. Can you send me the link to this one?
Absolutely. Okay, wait, please. you're gonna do further research.
I'm gonna do further research here.
Okay.
I gotta study up on this one. I'll have a more established take next week after I read into this.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
The second story is a bit on the disturbing side. It's not like
Disturbing.
that disturbing as in the cow mutilations from
No,
last week, but
no.
this one is saying that the moon is rusting and scientists are stunned.
The moon is
It's
rusting.
disturbing. Yeah, the moon is rusting. A newly published study notes that the moon is rusting, leaving experts perplexed by the discovery. The research published in Science Advances notes that the rust may be the result of water discovered on the moon, but it's still shocking given the lack of oxygen and, the lack there of water like the Earth, that their satellite has. Why is the moon rusting? Count panic. It is possible that the moon had water at some point.
So I didn't know the moon could actually rust, though.
I apparently neither did scientists count.
You know, Laura Bates of the
I was
Challenger.
gonna say, you know what? We need to get. Can you figure it out? Like,
She chimed in earlier, but if she's still around, I'd never heard about this. The moon is rusting. I thought the moon was made of cheese. Maybe it's a little moldy from time to time, but
moldy
rusting.
cheese.
But rusting. This is
it's
new to me here.
rusty cheese.
Yeah, rusty cheese. Well, is
It's,
this something we should be concerned about, Bob?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, if the scientists are perplexed and baffled, then it's definitely a thing.
Like, how long can we go with a rusty moon?
I don't know. I'm not a, despite what you may think, I am not an astrophysicist.
Wow.
I didn't know if you didn't know that about me. I'm
Maybe
a
we could get the guy with the
paranormal
maybe
investigator.
we
I'm
get the
not
guy
a
with the jetpack to fly up there with WD-40 and spray that thing down and get it back to normal. But no, hopefully this isn't something we have to be concerned about within our lifetimes and maybe future generations as well not be too concerned about that. Hopefully the moon holds up for some time here.
Oh, well.
What do we do without the moon, you know?
I mean, the moon's important. Not only is the moon important for a science, based reasons and pretty much our way of living, but in the metaphysical sense, the moon is extremely important. You got to think a lot of our witchy community uses the moon as their kind of emphasis and their basis on a lot of their craft that they have to do, and they use the cycles for different things like making moon water, for example. There's a lot of uses for the moon other than being my favorite celestial body. It's very important, and you got to think about what's going on that. Maybe there's something to it. If the moon's rusting, then clearly that the moon's not at full capacity, and maybe that could explain what's going on in 2020.
That's possible. I know somebody chimed in too. Those remember you talked about those hexers? They pointed out here in the comments that could be a part of
Oh man, I didn't even think about
the. Well,
that.
there you go.
Oh geez, the people that were hexing the moon might actually be getting away with it.
Be
Listen,
working.
so hear me out, my dearest witchy community from Bob After Dark. I need y'all to unhex the moon.
Please
I
do.
need there needs to be a big collective of you guys getting together and putting getting your blessings back out there on that beautiful, beautiful rock in the sky. Like
Yeah.
she deserves to be not hexed. And if this is a result of being hexed, no, that's not good. I didn't even think about that. Whoever chimed in with that one, thank you so. Oh, Rachel did. Thank you.
There you go.
Yeah, no,
Good
that's not.
point.
Last news story is the. Did you know that there is this one's the news itself isn't this isn't the title it, the new like when I read it I was like I didn't even know this was a thing, and I do this for a living, a pseudo living. Did you know that there's an international cryptozoology museum?
I did not know that. Where is this
Now
at?
I don't know. I'm looking into it, but apparently they were launching a big exhibit called Sasquatch Reveal 2020,
Okay.
where they're getting ready to set up things that are basically saying that proof of Sasquatch's existence. Like
Of
they
course,
have, they
yeah.
have some proof now.
Yeah.
But
But there's a museum dedicated to this.
yes, now keep in mind that there are museums for specific cryptozoology phenomena. For example, the Mecca I always want to make it to is the Mothman Museum in Point Pleasant, West Virginia, where they and that's where the Mothman statue stands. It's right outside the museum in Times the town square, and where they hold the Mothman Festival every year. There's also the Flatwoods Monster Museum, and I believe there's a Champy Museum outside of Lake Champlain as well. But so I mean, there's individual museums, but now there's an international centralized museum. I had no idea.
They should have built it here in the region where we live.
We have the mascot.
We got the mascot Hall of Fame, but
they should have built the. To be fair, in the region, it would have made sense for the International Cryptozoology Museum.
Maybe down the line they could build it.
When the Bob After Dark Museum opens up in some point,
wouldn't that be crazy? You could walk if it's a walking distance from you. Like you could walk to the.
I would be there every day. I'd get a job there. You'd are you be kidding outside. Me? What do you think I'm doing with my life? I am the.
You could work in the gift shop selling the Sasquatch collector tumblers or something like that, but. I mean, yeah, it might be worth the visit there, Bob. You might have to go down there and
you know,
take a look around.
I want to point out who chimed in and told me where it's at. Jack, the Bob After Dark, late night caller.
We got.
He said it's in Maine.
Yes, Becky too as well. The double correct. There.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Appreciate you, Becky and Jack. You guys are very great for being able
fact
to
checkers
chime in.
Here.
Yes, and Lauren Coleman. Lauren's kind of like the foremost authority in cryptids. Apparently, he's the curator of the museum. So if there's anybody that's doing a cryptozoology museum, it's, you know, Spike. So,
well, there you go.
Yeah, we got to go to Maine.
Get a bus together or something like that. Road trip.
Post-COVID.
Yeah.
Post-COVID. So hashtag panics take on, A, that there's an international cryptozoology museum that I guess I just somehow...
Yeah.
Skipped out on in my entire life and all my studies. I got egg on my face, and I'm admitting that.
Well, you know, when you tell me about this stuff, I guess it does make sense because like, you figure, I mean, we're a pretty big world here and even this country, a very big country. So there's got to be something dedicated for everything out there because who knows? I mean, we live in an area where there's a mascot museum, a mascot hall of fame. So there's probably tons of places like this throughout the country that we just don't know about. So I guess it doesn't surprise me too much. It'll be interesting to take a look around there, though. We should go. Get the bus.
Yep. Becky chimed in and said Children of the Night road trip.
She could drive.
Becky, if you told Becky we were leaving for Portland, Maine tomorrow, she would, I promise you, would be right here in that parking lot ready to go and pack the car up with snacks.
Becky, the Bobmobile.
She's kind of one of the den moms of the Bob After Dark team, I promise you. And she would have made sure I was wearing sunscreen this weekend.
I know you did. You didn't take her advice there, Bob. I don't know what were you thinking, but you look tan and you look healthy, so it's good to have you here.
Absolutely. All right. So, Count Panic, how are you? We actually are getting a caller, but we're going to dive into as soon as we're done and off this. Once the caller we take, I actually have a a spooky story from a listener.
Okay.
We're going to share. Who is on the line? I'm going to take a guess. It's John.
You know what? You'd be right there, Bob. It is John.
John, you're on the air.
Well, you had two choices, John or Jack. So,
first off, it's not 11:30 at night as I'm falling asleep at the studio. It wasn't Jack. It's relatively early still on Bob After Dark
too
time,
super.
So I knew it was you.
You're right. For Bob After Dark, time is endless, right?
Absolutely. How's it going, John? What's on your mind tonight?
No, I just want to compliment you having the two gentlemen state their cause for the people in Louisiana. You know, we were all put on this earth to help people, and getting the word out in any way, shape, or form to raise money for that is, you know, very good. And you can't beat, you know, them throwing in one heck of a prize like that also. So just calling to say, you know, I enjoyed listening to them, and I wish them well. And it's nice of Bob After Dark having them on.
Look, John, at the end of the day, I am very much a humanitarian. I like to make sure that people are doing okay. It's part of what I do with the metaphysical. I don't get to touch a whole lot on that, and I never really get to share what I do on the show. I like to help people. You know, I like to help people with their problems. And at the end of the day, there are times when you can't, you know, it's not a metaphysical problem. I'm not helping somebody through, you know, a haunting or whatever it might be. In this case, it's literally something physically tragic happening around them in the world, and they have zero control over it. So I wanted to be able to step up and help out in any way I can, and I appreciate you doing it.
Yeah, that sounds good, Bob. You take care, okay?
Thanks, John. You have a good night.
All righty.
All right, Count Panic.
Yeah.
We have a ghost story.
We have a ghost story,
we
Bob.
We do. This one's a bit on the – this one's a little bit more locale-focused.
Okay.
So I have a friend who has been a friend of mine for a very long time, and she is a big fan of the show. Her name's Nicole. And Nicole is a – I don't want to – she probably doesn't want to use the – she's – she's very much in tune with the world around her, and she actually just launched a business, and I'm going to plug it real quick, called Enchanted Mountains Magic, where she's going to be doing tarot readings and spiritual healings and whatnot. And Nicole's very good. She used to be one of the few people I ever trusted reading my doing readings for me in tarot, and Nicole was very sweet enough to share some experiences of hers and wanted to share them in. And Nicole's from New York, and not the city. She's upstate New York in the mountains. But we got a caller first, do we not? Count Panic. Oh, we have actually a couple callers. So let's talk a little bit about Nicole's story, and then we'll dive into the we'll take the phone call here second. So it says, "Dear Bob, I live in Seneca Territory. They are very active and very spiritual. Gahai Hill is my favorite. It's located in Allegheny State Park, New York. Considered sacred, most Seneca won't go there. The energy pulses there. I can feel it. Even just driving by. Like the mountain itself breathes. Anyway, all the manner of manifestation has been seen. Ghost of settler from long gone towns, hi-hat, the giant cannibal spirit of the Seneca, alien encounters and sightings, witch lights, some people sit out and watch airplanes or other nightly, during when people are sitting outside watching airplane lights or other night activities. Here, people sit and watch the night. On the hill or any given night, the balls of light float around that hill, and there's rumors of little people, which is the Seneca equivalent of hobbits. If you offer them tobacco, they won't follow you and won't play tricks on you. The hill is where the Seneca buried their witches, believing that they and other powerful beings could still transmit energy after death. Deer have been seen walking on their hind legs in this area. Drums can be heard near the top of the peak where pre-Seneca fort remains still. They don't even know who built it," and she just says, "I love it there." And she said, "She's a medium, and every day is an experience. I love giving messages and watching people be floored by it. It's usually mundane things. And she wants to share a scary experience. There is a house on Geiger Hollow, an old farmhouse. The man who lived there killed his family and himself. It's rumored that he was possessed, and she avoids places like that usually. But I went, and I felt like he literally looked into my soul and was after my friend, to the point where I told her never to go down that road again. He was mean, and possession is not quite out of the question. He shouted a lot, incoherent mumbling. It's cold there, and another for me, probably more interesting, is the St. Bonaventure University down the street from me, Old Franciscan University. My friend lived in a dorm behind Francis Hall, and there's always been this red candle in the window. It moved all the time. I thought I was nuts. Common places, I guess. No one is in that building at night. It's a very heavy feeling for monks, you know. Devoir Hall and floor is completely closed off. Some students stole seminary items and did a black mass, and the whole floor is off limits. Someone hung themselves shortly after. Walking by it, I can hear chanting. It feels as if 100 eyes are always watching me." And she said she's seen a ghost monk at that area, solid as you or me. I personally think it was Father Theobald. He was a very interested and enraged monk very engaged with the paranormal, and even leaving the seats in his classroom open for any spirits that wanted to come in and listen to a lecture. I was going to meet with him and talk paranormal, but he died, unfortunately, a few weeks previous. A year later, I see him still walking through the campus." Nicole, thank you so much for chiming in and sharing those experiences with me. I really appreciate it. And you guys could definitely go check Nicole's new business venture out. And it's, again, it's called Enchanted Mountains Magic. Panic, we got a call, and I want to get your take on Nicole's little story about her location over there.
Sure, we do have a phone call. Bob?
Who's on the air?
It's Bob Senior.
Oh, Bob, hey, Senior. Bob Senior. This sounds familiar.
Hey.
It's
too early to make a donation for Louisiana?
Absolutely not. We're happy. Right. I mean, we're not taking the donations on the air, but we can definitely get you set up to where you can send in the donations.
We could
start a little telethon. I'll stay up all night. I'll be dancing like Jerry Lewis does on his telethon.
Hey.
Well, thank you so much, Bob Anderson Senior. I guess you could say the creator of Bob After Dark.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had something to do with it. Plus, we have a granddaughter, and Bob has a niece that came from Louisiana.
Oh, yeah, that's my niece Riley. She's her family's like deep from the Louisiana area, so absolutely.
Okay, well, I appreciate the work you guys are doing. Keep it up. You're doing good.
Oh, thank you, Bob Senior.
How about
we appreciate
that?
You.
Good pep talk from Bob Senior.
Hey, both our dads called.
There you go. They're big fans.
They're big fans. Yeah. Thanks, Kyle. Thanks, Dad.
You got good families, huh? Okay, that's all.
Have a good night, Dad.
All right, you guys take care.
Take care. Well, they were in a street gang together.
They were in a street gang once upon a time ago. Yeah. That was really nice.
There you go.
Yeah, when my dad decided to donate. If you guys
We got the link. We'll put it up after
we'll put it up.
The video.
We'll definitely put it up after the video, and you guys can chime in. And I wouldn't call this a telethon because we're not taking the donations directly, but we appreciate hearing that you guys are going to donate. Thank you.
Well, there's a lack of telethons these days. They're really a thing of the past. So
maybe we'll do a paranormal.
How long can you stay up?
Jeez, I mean, I could if I had to.
You 24 hours?
We'll do a 24-hour show one time. Oh, jeez. Jack will call in at like 3 o'clock in the morning.
We're gonna be 1 minute left in the program of 24 hours.
It'll be like 24 hours. I'm like sitting here slurring, falling asleep, and then Jack will call and be like, "You know, guys, I have 27 notes from the past 24 hours I just wanted to share with you." And it'll be these really great facts. And I'm not picking on Jack, by the way. Jack's a dear friend of mine and a very one of the most respected paranormal investigators I've ever met.
Working on a book.
And Jack's brilliant. I just, Jack calls in literally at the last second of a show and he'll be like, "Here's some facts you missed, Bob." And I'm like, "Okay, I'm falling asleep, Jack, but go on." So anyway.
Yes.
Count Panic, Nicole's story.
All right, go backtrack to that dorm room.
Yeah, so Nicole says that the university near her is haunted severely. Like, they've closed off a floor, and apparently this one of the monks that taught there, it was a seminary, that's the term, right?
Yeah.
Apparently he was really big into the paranormal and left seats open in his classroom for the spirits to come sit down and join him.
Well, here's the thing with those old schools, and not the year of establishment escapes me right now, but you have all those old universities, old schools, and you get a lot of discoveries from that, right? I mean, it's always on those places in a city or town. Oh, this school is haunted. This university is haunted. So it adds up. But in this case, I mean, they closed off the whole wing there.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, when they do that, you know it's probably best to just avoid the air. Maybe I would, unless you're into that kind of stuff, maybe best not to maybe go to that university. Because if that one floor is blocked off, I'm sure there's
sounds
other
like
things
I went to,
lingering around as well. Lingering
it
around.
Sounds like... It sounds like we went to the wrong university.
We did. Our university was
not haunted.
Had nothing.
Nothing special about our university. And yet, listen, there's this university in the Seneca area in New York that apparently is very haunted, that they closed off wings, and Nicole has terrible feelings there. And what do? We're not going to that university. I think, and you know what? If they offered a metaphysical, like, degree there, that's what I would have been studying. Been like, I got a degree in metaphysics or parapsychology from a haunted university.
That'd be kind of cool, wouldn't
it? I would say that's the ultimate, like... that's the ultimate...
But
like,
the one where we went to, of course, locally here,
no,
I mean, there was
no,
really...
No,
I didn't hear any stories whatsoever.
Absolutely not.
What a drag. We
By
should get
the way,
our money
I just
back.
Want to chime in. If you guys are watching live and you're not in the chat, James and Becky are going back and forth.
Yeah.
And
are
I
they
see
fighting?
Becky is saying... No, Becky's saying something about booze and booze. For this bus tour we're taking to Portland, Maine for the Cryptozoology Museum.
Yeah, there you go.
I promise you she's not kidding.
No,
I've known Becky for a long time, and I assure you she is not joking. So keep an eye out for the official Bob After Dark bus tour going.
It's
going to
have your picture on the side of it and everything.
It'll just be pictures of mine in your face.
Like the Lex Luger Express, you know, we're traveling.
Oh, my God. That popped one person, and that might have just been me.
Lex Express.
All right, Count Panic, let's take a quick little break.
Yes.
Oh, wait, before we do. Do you want to be like Nicole and share a paranormal experience you may have? It could be anywhere from a ghost story, a cryptozoology experience, or you saw a cryptid. Could have been an encounter with an alien. I want to hear it. Or a new one that fans have been chiming in about are their experiences with sleep paralysis. If you've had any one of those things happen to you, or you just, you know, something off-putting happened, feel free to reach out. My email is bob@bobafterdark.com, or you can slide into the DMs on Instagram at bobafterdark, or hit us up on Facebook at bobafterdark as well. You don't have to be named. I do have people that have chimed in with stories that they would like to remain anonymous, and I have zero problems with you remaining anonymous. Absolutely.
There you have it. So, secret way to do things, too.
Or, if you have a news article you'd like to share with us, if there's something in the world that you would like us to cover, you can also slide into those DMs.
I'm sliding in right now, Bob.
Do you have a ghostly experience?
I don't want to be known, though. I'm going to have to do it in private, though.
You do realize that you produce the show.
Oh, okay.
And you could just chime in and be like, hey, Bob, we're talking about this experience I had. And I literally have no control over it. You're on the other end of the studio behind
glass. I can end
glass.
The show right now.
You can end the show right now.
I'm gonna turn the show around and take it back to base there. So.
Don't do that.
No, I won't.
All right, let's take a quick little break for our podcast fans. And for our live video audience people, just stick around for a couple moments. You're about to hear some words from a podcast that you should be listening to. Stay tuned.
Hey, true believers and new believers. This is Dr. David Hickney. I am a PhD in cryptozoology from MIT, and I'm the host of Freak of the Week. What's Freak of the Week? It's a podcast where people can call in to talk about all the crazy creatures and phenomena that are out there. Join me, my co-host, Dr. Elizabeth Marin, who may or may not be my sister. Spoiler, she is my sister, as we discuss such amazing topics like the ghost of Dave Coulier, the lost city of Miami, aliens, feline warriors, and much, much more. Freak of the Week comes out every week, hence the name, on Fridays. See you then.
And we're back. Hey, Count.
Hey, Bob, how's it going there?
It's going good. What'd you do
long,
during break?
Long time no see, Bob. Yeah, well, during break, you know, I was brushing up on how much buses do cost, and I think Becky might have bought one in the break there, and we'll see what happens. She might be pulling up right now. We don't know. So if you're watching on a live stream, a bus comes in the parking lot there, I'll pull up the window. It might be Becky. So you never know.
Would you like to know what I did?
What'd you do?
I crowned a pineapple.
Did you?
Yeah.
I had never seen that done before.
It's tricky. It's, you know, very old, ancient tradition.
Yeah, well, no. I like to see. You have the finished product on you or no?
No, I ate it already. You know,
oh,
you
ate it during the break.
I ate some of the pineapple, okay. And the rest goes into a cooler for us to have margaritas after. Pina coladas.
The pina coladas.
Pina coladas.
Those are big in the paranormal universe.
If you like pina coladas.
Well.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say that at all. I've never met a paranormal investigator. Listen, so when I go out drinking with other investigators or, like, you know, if I'm at a, you know, gathering of felt like-minded people, usually there's three things being drank, right?
Yeah.
And this is an unofficial, like, statistic. I'm making it up as I go, but I would say most of us probably drink some sort of whiskey or bourbon, beer or wine. I've never met a paranormal investigator roll out to an investigation or, you know, paranormal conference, whatever it might be, with, like, a Hawaiian shirt and, like, you know, a straw fedora, sipping a pina colada, being like, all right, guys.
That's not a paranormal thing.
I, you know what? If you want to break the mold, Count Panic, and show up to an investigation or, like, an after-investigation feng shui, and you want to drink a pina colada, all the more power to you.
I thought you guys drank Bloody Marys, though.
I don't.
Okay.
Because that is the most disgusting thing on the planet. the Queen of the Night's going to be pretty grumpy that I said that, but.
So if you want to have a paranormal investigation, and you want to supply drinks to those? It's going to be either beer or whiskey.
Beer, whiskey, or wine.
Or wine.
Or wine. The wine's for the classier. The classy
ghost hunt.
For the classy folk and the Victorian investigators and the mediums. You see a lot of mediums drink wine and
probably
stuff.
Probably depends on the venue.
And there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah. I'm not dogging the wine.
No.
I'm more of a beer guy. I'll have a beer at, like, a post investigation or if I'm at a feng shui or gathering. I don't drink before the investigation. That's a big no-no, by the way. Quick spooky PSA. Do not go into an investigation under the influence. Mm-hmm. I don't even care if you had one beer. Do not go in an investigation even when you had one beer. Reason being is because alcohol, even though it might be enjoyed by people that are responsible over the age of 21 or 18, depending on where you're at in the world, if you go into an investigation while drinking something, your inhibitions are going to be hindered, right? Your mind is going to be differed. So you're either going to start seeing things that might not be there. Your hysteria might be elevated. I've been on investigations and bus tours and stuff where other people are drinking, and it really ruins it for a lot of people, especially when you get really slosh drunk. Pete from Northwest Indiana has a good story about he was doing an investigation at a distillery, and people just ruined it for him. And it's actually a really cool place to be, but I digress. So don't drink and investigate. Drink after the investigation, or if you guys are having a gathering like the night before, but no alcohol before an investigation.
Not, and how about during the investigation?
Yeah, absolutely not.
We said before the investigation.
Don't drink during the investigation. What? It does the same exact thing.
I didn't know. Well, you didn't clarify that.
Oh, jeez.
Well, it's good to know.
Cow panic. So this week we're dedicating the entire episode to the idea of Louisiana.
Okay.
Because we had a tragedy struck Louisiana, and we had Ben and Brian on earlier talking about how we can help them, and I wanted to do an episode based on something Louisiana themed. And I think the probably one of the most haunted spots in Louisiana is probably New Orleans. Mm-hmm. And I would argue, I've never been, but I've heard nothing but things from people that have been there, that there was a certain energy. And Jack Osborne in the Portals to Hell episode, when they went to this certain person's mansion, says the town almost has a pulse. It's almost as if you removed every living person from New Orleans, that New Orleans would still be alive in some some kind of way. And there's definitely a thing about it, right?
Yeah.
So I went and I did some research, and I was trying to figure out what I wanted to talk about. And I wanted to talk about the Madame Dauphin LaLaurie.
That was your
mansion.
That was pretty good. Not as good as Brian's, but
oh no! I listen.
That was pretty good.
Brian's accent is absolutely wonderful, and oh my, I couldn't keep up with something like that.
That was a real. Now that was the real accent.
Oh, listen, I've hung out with the Louisiana Ghostbusters, and I could promise you 1,000%. That you get them together and they just go and you can't keep up.
Amazing.
The back and forth with them is so wonderful. So it's Delphine LaLaurie mansion or house. And we got to talk about who Delphine was first and foremost. Marie Delphine was born on March 19th, 1787, and later ended up marrying somebody and marrying several folk over the time. She actually had not one, not two, but three husbands during her time. We have a caller on the line.
Before you get to the story, Bob, this is a big moment before you continue on with the story, because we're not at the end of the show just yet.
Oh, it's not even 10:15.
And we have a caller. We have Jack on the line here.
All right, Jack.
Hey, guys.
So tell me you're listening to the show on like an old tube radio, sitting in the dark of your room writing your book by like candlelight.
With a pen, with a feather pen.
With a feather pen. How's it going, Jack?
Good. I'm glad to talk to you guys again. Hey, I wanted to mention something about New Orleans.
Oh, listen, whatever Jack has to say is going to be probably one of the most brilliant facts you're ever going to hear ever. So
don't say that, God.
Jack facts trump the Pat Facts and Ghostly podcast. Oh. Yeah, okay, Jack facts. Let's hear it.
So I've been to New Orleans, the French Quarter.
Oh my! It calls to me, and I've never been.
Yeah, I stayed a week there. This was several years ago. And Bob, what you were just saying right now about there's something about New Orleans that just draws people in. That's very, very true. I mean, talk about a paranormal experience. Like, I never actually had a paranormal experience in New Orleans, but just the feeling of being there, like, it's as if my batteries were being recharged. And as a matter of fact, when I left, I really didn't want to leave. When I left and got back to Chicago, there was a couple people that told me that I seemed different, that I seemed like I had a light around me. And we're not talking about psychics that told me this either. So So there really is something about New Orleans. I remember walking down the streets and just feeling antiquity and feeling richness. It's a very mysterious place. I really love that place. It's like a second home to me.
Wow. So have you been to the location that we're talking about tonight?
Yes, I have. Yeah, I passed by there. I did the vampire tour, the witch tour, and the ghost tour there. And, yeah, we passed by there, and it was really – obviously, we didn't get to go inside. But, yeah, it's a really haunting location, and it's beautiful. The building, the exterior was beautiful, and the stories were horrific. So.
Absolutely, and we're going to dive into that 100% here shortly. But, Jack, thank you so much for calling in.
Yeah, no problem.
Thanks, absolutely. Guys. Hey, when COVID's over, we'll get a Bob After Dark trip. We'll go down to New Orleans.
Here's what we're going to do. Becky's going to take us to Maine tonight, and then we're going to go straight from Maine to New Orleans. Yeah.
I'm going with you guys to Maine, by the way.
Listen, I promise you that bus tour is going to happen, and we're going to go. We'll hit West Virginia along the way because that makes no sense, but we're going to stop in West Virginia. And then we'll go up through New York and we'll go see Sleepy Hollow because that's on my bucket list for paranormal stuff.
All right.
Thank you so much, Jack, for calling in.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Thank you,
Jack.
Have you ever been to New Orleans, Panic?
I have not.
Well, then I think you and I have a thing in common. We have another caller. I'm getting to the story tonight, guys. I promise. This is something that Vix, I know, has actually been there, and she chimed in and said, New Orleans is always home, just mesmerizing. All right, Cop Panic, we have a caller.
Yeah, we have D on the line here.
Ah, D, you're on the air.
Hey, Bob.
Hi, D, where are you calling from?
I'm currently calling from the front seat of an ambulance.
I mean, I guess it's better than being in the back seat. Yeah. Where are you from, D?
Currently in Minnesota, but I live in Wisconsin.
Oh, fair. The border thing, like Indiana, Illinois, I get it. Well, thank you so much. I know who you are, but you're the first time caller, so I have to put you on the spot like that. What's on your mind tonight, D?
Oh, well, the topic at hand, I have actually been to.
Oh, really?
Hi.
Let's talk about it. Tell me a little bit. Were you there on a tour? Or did you get to go into the house or what?
So, no, I didn't get to go in the house. So I was there in December, and I took what was called, it was the French Quarter Phantoms Tour.
Okay.
Which actually, like, it's kind of neat because you start out at this place called the Voodoo Lounge, which was at the quarter, which was at North Rampart and Orleans Street or Avenue, which was actually built at the original site of the first cemetery in New Orleans that was no longer used, called the St. Peter Street Cemetery. So, like, you kind of started out at kind of the place that had a weird vibe where you started, and the finale of the tour was the Lowry Mansion. And when we were there, we didn't get to go inside. We had to stay outside. And the tour guide, I want to say his name was Bobby or something like that, was particularly afraid of the house. You can't quite tell if it's an act or if, you know, it's all part of the tour, or if it was, he just kind of seemed legitimately afraid of it. He refused to walk on that side of the street. He told the stories about it on the opposite side of the road. Remember, right, he did make mention that one of his grandparents had lived in the house at one point as like an assistant or worked with the owner at the time, and made him promise that he'd never step foot into the place. He talked about, so in New Orleans, a lot of places have like balconies that run over the sidewalk. And he talked about how if you walked underneath the balcony that ran alongside the Governor Nichols Street side, that you would be cursed, and talked about how many people unwillingly walk underneath that every day and could be possibly hearing something with them, and that if you touched the place, you would pretty much had a good chance of bringing something home with you. Well, I was there. I had to do it. I said, I'll walk under it. I'll touch it.
And then you went in December, so that was pre-2020. I'm going to say that DCAUSE 2020.
Well, I mean, I can't deny it because, yeah, it's a possibility. But I just remember him saying, he's like begging me not to do it. And again, it could have been an act, could have been just the routine. He's like, I remember him saying, you seem like a pretty nice guy, please don't do it. And but I was so adamant about doing it that he's like, I tell you what, if you're so dead set on doing it, let me walk away first. And that way, if something happens to you, I don't feel responsible. So he went and he left, and I continued on. I walked across the street. I walked under the balcony, and I touched the mansion.
Oh, go on.
To be wearing my Bob After Dark t-shirt.
Oh.
Yeah, good job, D.
How about that?
I appreciate you.
There.
Thanks. Not only is D getting cursed, but D's getting cursed wearing my t-shirt.
But at the end of it, I went to the Marie Laveau altar, and I left her a offering, and then also visited her proposed burial site the next day and left another one.
Oh, so counterbalances each other.
Yep, and I flew home on an airplane and made it home, so.
That's fair, but then 2020 happened.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Well, at least he had his t-shirt on.
He did. At least he had a Bob After Dark. Yeah. At least he got cursed in style.
Yeah.
New run of those coming soon, by the way, folks, for you guys that missed out on the first run. Well, thank you so much for calling in, D. I appreciate you.
Absolutely, Bob.
Thank you. Have a good one.
You too.
So, that's good.
How about that?
That definitely prefaces the story quite a bit there.
Yeah.
Delphine was not a good person by any means. So, anyway, we were saying she was born on March 19th, 1787, and was born to a very wealthy family in New Orleans. Her family, like her male side of the family, dominantly on her father, the McCarthy side, were very much big in the military. They were, some of them were knighted by, you know, royal folk. Her first husband, for example, was an officer to the Spanish crown and second in command to the Louisiana governor. She married husband number one at the ripe age of 14. So she married husband number one at 14. He ended up actually passing away from a boat accident. He was on a ship, and they actually crashed into a sandbar off the shores of Havana. And then at that time, Delphine actually gave birth to her first daughter, Marie Delphine Francesca Borgia. And they actually baptized her daughter. Delphine actually married again on her 20th birthday, a few weeks after her mother died, and she married an older Frenchman and widower, Jean-Paul Blanc, and Delphine's mother ended up dividing her very wealthy estate between three children, and Blanc was a very savvy business person and perhaps saw the inheritance as an opportunity and the reason why he probably married a young widowed young mother, Delphine, and he actually ended up passed away after the Battle of New Orleans, and it was not a good situation. However, his estate totaled, and this is according to the Ghost City Tours of New Orleans, his estimated estate totaled $160,000 or $2.5 million in today's currency. And so not only was Delphine now very wealthy from her mother's side, but her husband just left also $2.5 million. She decided to marry husband number three, Dr. Louis Lurie, in 1825. And at that point, she was extremely wealthy, as I said. And they ended up setting up shop in where the Lurie Mansion is now in New Orleans. And by 1831, she purchased the lots on Royal and Hospital, now Governor, now in that area, and where the now famous LaLaurie Mansion sits very scarily. Now, why am I giving you this history lesson? Because I wanted to give you a little bit about Delphine's past. And yes, as tragic as it was, Delphine had a very not so black and white path, you know, during her adult life. She was very much, she had a very colorful and very disturbing life and during her adult life. Delphine was and is quoted as being the first female American serial killer. Delphine was not a very good person. Delphine was a horrifying masochist. And I'm not going to go into all the details, but if you do have children that are listening to the episode tonight, make sure you kind of cover their ears during this part. Delphine was tortured her slaves and in the most gruesome ways possible. Jack Osborne on the Portals to Hell episode, I watched that for research getting into this, kind of quoted her as the Dr. Mangala of New Orleans and in America. She was performing weird, bizarre rituals on these things. She was doing a lot of scary, not good things. She was collecting blood from her victims. It was all around not a good sight. On April 10th, 1834, a fire actually broke out at the LaLaurie Mansion in New Orleans. And when officials came, they found a torture chamber where enslaved workers were brutally brutalized by Delphine. Rescuers found a 70-year-old black woman trapped in the kitchen during the fire because she was chained up by LaLaurie and was too busy saving her furniture to save the woman who was handcuffed to the stove. And some officials say now that she was actually the one that started the fire to try to gain some attention, to try to get some folk to get some help. And in the stories go on. When she married her husband, her third husband, and was, you know, set up, she was a well-known sadist and just really brutalized these people. In 1833, Delphine actually chased a small enslaved girl with a whip until the girl fell off the roof and ended up actually dying in Portals to Hell. They actually, by the way, they're the only paranormal group that's ever actually been in there, and they're probably the only, you know, they're the only TV show that's ever been in there and did an investigation. So a lot of the, you know, a lot of the research I had to do was due to that episode. And actually show the window where the young girl was being chased by Lori and ran right out the window and unfortunately fell to her death. When the fire happened and the officials kind of went in, they saw the horrifying things that were left behind. And those, you know, they went up into the attic and they found Lori's horrifying torture chamber, and that's where the worst of things were. They found people in all kinds of horrible situations. She would break bones and reset them in horrifying manners. They actually found a woman up there with a hole in her head with maggots living there, and she was still alive. Now, back then, there was a lot of, back then slavery was, you know, that was what happened down there. It's not a good thing, not a accepted thing, but it happened. It's history. You understand, you got to understand that stuff was going on. But during her time as a slave owner, there was a certain kind of common consensus that you would, at least in New Orleans, that you would actually treat your slaves like people and your servants like people. And they weren't property. At least they had some, not as good thing, but at least they, you know, they heard about what was going on. And an angry mob showed up at her house afterwards, after the neighbors heard. And they went to the home to, you know, organize and try to get the people out of there. And, you know, just, they wanted her dead. people that her neighbors and whatnot. The night that the mob gathered in protest after hearing about the torture chamber, she and her husband fled by boat, leaving the butler, who also participated to torture, to face the wrath of the crowd. And unfortunately, this isn't a story that had a karmatic ending. Delphine never got tried for her crimes. Delphine, her reputation was destroyed in upper-class society, and when she fled New Orleans, apparently she lived out the rest of her days in Paris and died in 1842. Now, as Delphine's story is completely and utterly horrific, and it's despicable what happened to those poor people that were there, there's something about that house that is apparently really evil and very much a scary, scary place. And when you have that much energy that's there, there's bound to be something left behind of a paranormal, like, taste, right? So I have a couple notes here, because the only paranormal investigation that's ever happened there, again, was Jack Osborne's Portal to Hell episode. So a lot of what I have here was just from straight from them talking to the people and being able to see it and have, you know, basic what they had. So the earliest form of a paranormal encounter was back in 1834. After the fire and after Delphine escaped the home, people would hear screaming from inside the house that was now vacant. And they couldn't figure out exactly why there were screams. And eventually, unfortunately, officials went in after being called, and they found a crawl space under the floor while Delphine kept slaves. And they were there when the fire happened and afterwards, and was never rescued. Those screams that people were hearing out on the streets weren't ghostly, as they were actual, real screams. Over the years, different folk have actually lived in the Delphine Mansion to this day. There's families that live there, and it was actually the signature place for a certain TV show that I know a lot of people are fans of, American Horror Story Coven, actually based their main story there. Some of the people that have lived in that house have reported things like the beds moving from the wall to the middle of the room, ghostly screams in the middle of the night, the apparition of the young girl who ran out the window and died sitting in corners floating upwards on the roof of the home. There's been physical harm caused to the residents, scratches, bites, hair pulling, tripping downstairs, being shoved to the ground. The staff has claimed vibes, and there's even one story where they were setting up a fax machine system in the house, so they weren't going to fax from one machine to the next. The person who was caretaking at the time was named Lisa, and Lisa was sending a fax over to the other person, and it just says, "Hi, I'm Lisa." When she faxed over the person, she left the room, came back, and I copied on the paper through the fax machine, it said, "Hi, Lisa, I'm Madame Loret." No kidding. The caretakers claim to see the kitchen doors open and close and slam hard, and even there's ghostly images of a woman in white wandering around. Every room in that house has a apparition or a ghost story or some sort of experience. The current residents have actually found random bits of ritual memorabilia left about, spirit boards and potions. And unfortunately, that attic where that torture chamber was is where the central hub of the electricity is, and the electrician for the home is terrified to go up there and has been attacked several times being up there by forces not seen. You guys can actually go and watch the Portals to Hell episode on the Travel Channel website. Just got to watch it with ads, but they have the entire episode for you guys to go and watch. And some of the, you know, evidence that they were catching and some of this, some of the imagery was horrifyingly, you know, scary, and seeing some of the stuff. If there is legitimately one place in New Orleans that is haunted, I would probably say that the Loret Mansion is haunted. And for good reason, too. You got to think, the horrific incidences that happened in that house left a real big footprint behind of bad energy. And a lot of those souls of those people that were tortured and died there, you got to think, something like 25 slaves have gone missing, but that's just the number of ones that are recorded. You have to understand there was no real rights for these people. They were slaves. So, you know, accounting wasn't necessarily a thing that people thought about. Like, who knows how many people Delphine tortured and killed in that house? It's horrifying. And I couldn't imagine, you know, if there is a place on Earth that I would say is haunted, it's definitely that house. Hashtag panic stake.
Well, it's a tragic story that you tell there, Bob. But you Absolutely. Mentioned the house is still standing. There's current owners of this house.
Yes, you and Dean, when he just called, and even Jack when they said it. It's definitely something somebody's been. You know, places you can go.
Now,
and see.
Of course, there's people that are really into the paranormal, of course, but
absolutely
to purchase the house.
Oh,
would you have, even if you're into this stuff, wouldn't you have second guesses? Like, you know what? Because the people. Do they actually live there, or they just have
oh, no,
it as
they,
a...
they live there.
They
have caretakers that have apartments in the mansion.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's that...
And it hasn't drove them out yet.
No.
Oh.
But I don't want to say the help, but the people that work there, the caretakers,
sure.
That's the word I'm
yeah.
looking for. The caretakers that live there all have experiences, and apparently the homeowners themselves are very recluse. They don't talk about it.
But is it? It's obviously not enough for them to leave the home. Of course, they must have some kind of pride to be there, some kind of something to be there, some reason. Of course, it's a job at the end of the day, but to stay there, of course, too, as well. But I just don't know if that's for me. Now, you're a guy that likes to go out there into the thick of things and investigate.
Yeah.
Would this be something up your alley to actually stay in this residence, not just for a night, but to live there?
I don't know. And I wouldn't say it's because of the paranormal experiences. Me being me, I would buy a house that's on the market is haunted, right? I wouldn't even hesitate.
They have to tell you, right?
Yeah, they have to tell you. It's
okay.
Actually a lie. And I don't know. That's a good question. Morality says probably not.
Yeah.
With the ghosts don't bother me. You know, I'd live there and have a conversation with them at the end of the day. You know, what's up, guys? I don't think I can handle the energy in that house day in and day out.
Yeah.
You know, it would take a team of every religious leader you could possibly think of. I'd have a priest, a rabbi, several shamans there to literally cleanse the energy out of that place before I would consider living there. I'd stay the night, absolutely. I mean, I'd want to feel it, but you have to understand I'm very, very susceptible to emotions, both people that are physically there and not there. I'm a clairvoyant in that regard. I'm very much a... I'm very empathic when it comes to that regard. And I don't think I have it in me to physically be in that house for a long period of time. I understand the historical significance, and I understand why we have to talk about these things, because they were horrific tragedies that happened to a group of people. And it's not excusable. There's no, you know, I understand her life was tragic, but there's no excuse for what she did to those people. That's awful. So... I don't know. I guess I would stay and live there, but I'd have to have several groups of folk going.
You don't want your
there.
Bed moving across the room every night.
No. I would, you know, and it's not even the ghosts that are there. They could stay. That's their choice. I just to cleanse the negative emotions out of there. It would take a lot, and I can promise you that I would be like, I'd be crippled with anxiety and emotions and depression and stuff real fast being there for an extended period of time.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I get some people are into that stuff, but, you know, sometimes you got to take a step back and be like, you know what? You really got to look what's going on here. So interesting, though. I'm tragic, but I mean, it's historic, right? It's a part of it now.
It's a part of it. Yeah. And you have to understand, like, the house itself, if you look past the tragedies, which it's really hard to do, the house itself is gorgeous. You know, you want to talk about, like, if you think about somebody in high class New Orleans that are living there, and like, that's what you think of, like, automatically, you know, the architecture and, you know, just the interiors, you know, you get to see the shots and Portals to Hell and American Horror Story Coven. It's a gorgeous home, yeah. But there'd be pounds and pounds of salt being swept across those floors daily, for me to be able to do it. Yeah. I would. I mean, you could say I'm living in the most haunted house in America. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's other ones, but the Delphine Manor, that one strikes me. And doing my research for this episode really disturbed me. Yeah, it's normal. You know, somebody died in the house or somebody got killed, right? And you're like, oh, okay, that's why it's haunted. Well, these people were more than just killed. They were horribly tortured. They lived their lives leading up to that point in straight agony. And you see in the investigation that there's all these hiding holes and cubbies and stuff where she kept people as, like, yikes. I can't even give you a word to describe that. You know, I watched it and I wasn't even there, and I could feel it. But still, it's a good question. I would definitely probably do it.
All right. And I know there's people in the comments now wondering if they have to tell you it's haunted. And we have James says they don't have to tell you it's haunted. Jack says in the state of Louisiana, real estate agents do not have to disclose the death of the house.
I've talked to people, and maybe it's state by state, county by county, maybe. But I've had friends that have worked in real estate who, like, after they found out what I did, they're like, oh, you know, people call and ask for, like, the haunted house, like, that, you know, that's what they're looking for.
Well, I know. If there's like a murder that takes place, they probably got to tell you that. But if it's actually haunted, I don't know. But they're saying they do
let's
not.
Let's try to find somebody. Yeah. Let's try to find somebody in the real estate.
Real
world.
Estate. I know some real estate people.
So yeah. Let's find that out. I'm curious what you do, because I thought you had to, and I've had people tell me that. Maybe I'm wrong.
I'll ask them.
Yeah. Let's find out. Let's get an answer for next week. But let's get the rounded up count. What do you got to say to our audience tonight?
Well, I look forward to see everybody on the bus ride. Becky's driving to Maine, and
the booze and brews. I don't know. Becky and James.
They'll think of the thing there. But I mean, I guess that's coming soon enough. I guess we'll be safe eventually here in America. We'll take a bus ride. And, well, heck, you know what? Let's just go around the country.
Yeah.
We'll
charge it the Count Panic charge card.
Put it on the tab there.
Put it on the tab.
Good stuff, Bob.
Absolutely. Folks, before I leave, make sure you guys, if you can afford to help out, every dollar counts towards the donations to help the people that are tragically dealing with real life problems in Louisiana right now, as Ben and Brian were talking about earlier in the show. We're going to have the links up on the Bob After Dark page where you guys can go and donate. Every $25, you have an entry to win a Disney trip. That's expenses paid. That's given to by the people running the event, the organization. The money you're donating isn't going to Disney. It's, you know, they're paying for that part out of pocket. So make sure if you guys get a chance to check that out and help donate, that's going to be a big deal to help out a lot of people. 2020 is a weird year, guys. Putting it really mildly. Yeah. And, you know, if we could do something good for some people, I think that would make the world just a little bit better. Right. But on behalf of Count Panic and the entire Children of the Night, I just want to say thank you so much for watching and listening another episode of Bob After Dark. To my mom and dad, I just want to wish you guys sweet dreams. And to Tiff, no matter where you are in the world, I just want to wish you the sweetest dreams of them all. Till next time, everybody, the two most important rules of Bob After Dark are: not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Till next time. We'll be right back.
Memoriam Development.